Some of you know that I like old black and white movies. When my wife asks, is there a movie on tonight, I know she's talking about something on TMC, Turner Movie Classics. There aren't very many movies by Cary Grant or Humphrey Bogart that I haven't seen. I did find one yesterday, though, to see if I can rent it somewhere. Last week I watched, without my wife, this is not her kind of movie. Last week I watched Judgment at Nuremberg, an old black and white movie starring Spencer Tracy and Burt Lancaster. It was Hollywood's take on the trial of the Nazis and the Nazi sympathizers at the end of World War II. And in one of the scenes, the character played by Burt Lancaster, a German judge, explains the rationale, explains the reasons why so many normal German citizens followed Hitler. Looking back over 80 years, it's hard for us to understand now, today, how that nation could have followed Hitler into the Holocaust of World War II. But that speech explains the pressures and the opportunities that caused so many Germans to vote for Hitler, to overlook the things that he had published in Mein Kampf, until it was too late and they no longer really had any choice about it. We shake our heads at Nazi Germany, but is our nation that much better? How could the Republican Party nominate a megalomaniac like Donald Trump? How could the Democratic Party nominate someone as corrupt as Hillary Clinton? One of those two very likely will be the next president. How could so many normal American citizens put one of those two in the most powerful position in the world? Now, these circumstances, whether 80 years ago or whether 4 months into the future, teach us that all of us must follow someone. And of course, I speak not just in the political arena. In the most important matters of life and death, we have to trust somebody. We have to follow some leader. And Jesus addresses this truth here in Luke 6, verses 39 through 42. Read with me, please. Luke 6, beginning in verse 39. And he, Jesus, spoke a parable to them. Can the blind lead the blind? Will they not both fall into the ditch? A disciple is not above his teacher, but everyone who is perfectly trained will be like his teacher. And why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but do not perceive the plank in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, brother, let me remove the speck that is in your eye, when you yourself do not see the plank that is in your own eye? Hypocrite! First remove the plank from your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck that is in your brother's eye. Now, it's not easy to follow Luke's train of thought in this paragraph. I think all of the commentaries that I read this week admit that fact. And I thought seriously about just skipping these verses. But how many times have you heard these verses quoted? The blind leading the blind. The plank in the eye and the speck. One of the benefits of expositional preaching through books of the Bible is that preachers don't get to choose the topics that they want to preach about. The Holy Spirit does. And so we're going to follow the Holy Spirit's leading this morning, and we're going to wrestle with the meaning of these verses. And I expect that maybe in the second service you're going to have some questions about what we talk about. The common thread that seems to run through this paragraph is leadership. Verse 39 uses the word lead. Verse 40 uses the word teacher twice. I believe Jesus is answering a key question here. Why is it so important to follow the right leader? Why is it so important to make certain that you sit under the teaching of the right teacher? And Jesus gives us the first answer to this question in verse 39. And that's because following the wrong leader can have devastating consequences. The blind follow the blind. They both fall in the ditch. Devastating consequences. Germany followed Hitler in the 1930s, and in the 1940s, some 65 million people died as a consequence. At least part of the Russian people followed the Bolsheviks in 1917. And over the next 30 years under Stalin's regime, some 40 million Russians died. Something similar happened in China in the 1950s and 60s. Again, something similar happened in Vietnam and in Cambodia in the 60s and 70s. Follow the wrong leader and you may not just end up in the ditch. Follow the wrong leader, you may end up dead in the ditch. But I don't think Jesus is speaking of politics in this passage. He's not speaking of the kingdoms of this world, but rather of His kingdom. He's speaking of spiritual realities. When Jesus speaks of the blind leading the blind, it's very probable that He is referring to the leaders of the Jews. Although He doesn't mention them by name here, it's probable that He's speaking of the chief priests and the scribes and the Pharisees. But there aren't any scribes and Pharisees on the scene today. So how does Jesus' warning here in verse 39 apply to us? When are we in danger of blindly following blind leaders? Let me make a couple of suggestions. First of all, I think most certainly Jesus is talking about our choice of a local church. Of the pastor we follow, the pastor that we trust, the pastor who teaches us. Blindly follow the wrong pastor and there will be grave consequences. The book of James includes a verse that always gives me pause. James 3 and verse 1 says, "My brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we, teachers, shall receive a stricter judgment." Teachers, pastors, preachers will receive a stricter judgment because any mistakes that we make are multiplied in their consequences. As your pastor, if I make a critical error, I don't just end up in the ditch myself. I may lead scores or even hundreds of others into the ditch as well. So first of all, this certainly has to be applied to our choice of a pastor. But with modern technology, we actually have a lot of opportunities to choose teachers, to choose leaders who can lead us into the ditch. Since the invention of the printing press, every time we pick up a book, we're following a leader. Since the invention of the internet, every time we read a blog, every time we read something out there on that internet, We're hearing from a teacher. Today there are so many that can lead us into the ditch if we blindly follow them. Now, I keep talking about the ditch. It's important that you get the right idea about the word that's translated ditch here in our New King James Version. You know, when I think of a ditch, I think of the roads down in South Georgia where Jeannie's daddy pastored. And I, every fall, for probably 20, 25 years, I would go down there. I would preach a week of special meetings for him. So I got pretty familiar with those roads. They're dirt roads. Red dirt roads. And about twice a year, and it seemed like they always did this just before we would come down there. I don't know if the county did it or the state did it, but they would come through with a big piece of heavy machinery, and they would clear out those ditches. Those ditches would get filled with silt and with mud, and they'd come and they would dig that out, all that stuff out, into the middle of the road, and then they would plow it under. And of course, whatever trash and garbage was in that ditch got plowed into the roadbed. But at that point, those ditches could be 5-6 feet deep. They might even be a little bit deeper. When I think of, you know, falling in the ditch, that is immediately to me the picture that comes to mind. Now, if I were to fall in that ditch, I could probably get out. Now, there were some places where I wouldn't so much want to go in the ditch because maybe I'd have to back up 100, 200 yards to get out, but I could probably get out of the ditch. That is not what Jesus is talking about here, okay? The word that's translated ditch here is used in only one other passage in the New Testament. It's used in the book of Matthew in the passage that talks about a sheep falling in the ditch on the Sabbath day and somebody having to go and rescue the sheep out of the ditch on the Sabbath day. A better translation would be the word pit. I mean, when you read this word, what ought to come to mind is the story of Joseph. You remember the story of Joseph? His brothers despised him, and he came out to check on them, and they threw him in a pit, in a hole that he could not get out of. That's the idea here. You follow the wrong spiritual leader and you may very well end up in a hole so deep you cannot get out of it. And in fact, I have to wonder if Jesus did not use this word because he wanted us to think of the pit of hell. I mean, that's the ultimate reality here. You follow the wrong spiritual leader and you may end up in the pit, unable to escape for all eternity. Jesus here says we must not be blind to the importance of following the right spiritual leader, the right teacher. Then there's a second reason why it's so important to follow the right leader, because we end up becoming like those that we follow. We end up becoming like those that we follow. That's what Jesus says here in verse 40. Jesus says the process of discipleship, when that training process is complete, when it really works, when it really functions, then the disciple, the learner, becomes like the teacher. That's the biblical model, by the way. Maybe we'll talk about that biblical model in the second service. But now what Jesus says here is a little bit non-intuitive for us. The end of the 20th century, beginning of the 21st century. I mean, when we think of education today, we think of the transmission of content. Okay, we got college kids coming back in a couple of weeks. You know, you talk to them, you ask them, why are you going to college? Well, I'm going to college to learn biology. You know, I'm going to college to learn subject matter. Not one in 100 college students, if you were to ask, are you going to college so you can become like your professor, would say yes. That just doesn't cross our minds today. That's not what education is about. But if you think about it, Jesus is really right. What does a pre-med major really want? I mean, ultimately, what does a pre-med major want? He wants to be a doctor. He wants to become like what his professors already are. What does a nursing major want to be when she grows up? She wants to become a nurse. You see what I'm saying? You're studying graphic design. What's your real goal? Well, my goal is to become a graphic designer like the people that taught me. See, I'm not certain that it's even possible. We can debate this in the second service if you want. I'm not sure it's even possible for someone to transmit content, to transmit subject matter, without the people that get that subject matter in some ways becoming like them. But certainly in the spiritual realm, when we follow a pastor, it's not possible, Jesus teaches us here, to follow that man without becoming like him in some ways. Jesus says here, this is how the process works. Everyone who is perfectly trained will be like his teacher. Now, the writings that we find throughout the New Testament, they just reinforce this idea. The writings of the Apostle Paul was very clear that the people that he taught, the people that he discipled and won to Jesus Christ and brought into New Testament churches, he was very clear that they needed to be faithful to what he taught. But it didn't stop there. He also taught them to be faithful to how he lived. He told the Corinthians, he told the Thessalonians, be imitators of me. That's the word he used. And the word in the original language is the word from which we get our English word mimic. It's a word that doesn't have to do just with teaching. It doesn't have to do just with content. It has to do with character. It has to do with lifestyle. It has to do with behavior. This is why Paul, when he was writing the first church manual, you know, we have a church manual in the Bible about how to run a church. It's called 1 Timothy. It ought to be called First Church Manual, really. I mean, that's the title that ought to be on it. It was the First Church Manual. And what did Paul tell Timothy? He said, you be an example to those who follow you. Why? Why does a pastor have to be an example? Because it's inevitable that if he is the teacher, if he's the pastor, if he's the teacher, that his people are going to become like him in certain ways. This is why the qualifications for spiritual leadership that we find in 1 Timothy 3, that we find in the book of Titus, they focus not on the ability to transmit content. They don't even focus on the ability to build a big successful church. They focus on character. In fact, keep your finger here and let's turn over and read those qualifications in 1 Timothy 3. Keep your finger here in Luke 6. Turn over with me to 1 Timothy 3. Begin reading in verse 2. A bishop, that word bishop means overseer. It's pointing to the leader of the church. So he's talking about the spiritual leader in the church. A spiritual leader then must be blameless, the husband of one wife, temperate, sober-minded, of good behavior, hospitable, able to teach. That's the only one in there that has to do with the transmission of truth. Not given to wine, not violent, not greedy for money, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not covetous. One who rules his own house well, having his children in submission with all reverence. For if a man does not know how to rule his own house, how will he take care of the church of God? Not a novice, lest being puffed up with pride, he fall into the same condemnation as the devil. Moreover, he must have a good testimony among those who are outside, means outside the church, lest he fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. These qualifications don't emphasize the transmission of truth. They don't emphasize the ability, the leadership ability that we hear so much about today to build a big church. They focus on character. Why? Because the people in the pew will become like the pastor they follow in certain ways. That is the teaching of the New Testament. That's why it's so important to choose the right leader, the right pastor. This is also why when the New Testament describes false teachers, when it describes false prophets, it describes them not only in terms of false doctrine, what they teach, it also describes them in terms of their lifestyle, their character, their conduct. Again, let's look at one example. We could look at a number of them, but just one example. Turn to 2 Peter chapter 2. Second Peter 2, the entire chapter here is about false prophets. I'm not going to read the entire chapter, but follow with me, starting in verse 1. But there were also false prophets among the people, even as there will be false teachers among you, who will secretly bring in destructive heresies, even denying the Lord who bought them, and bring on themselves swift destruction. And many will follow their destructive ways, because of whom the way of truth will be blasphemed. By covetousness, they will exploit you with deceptive words. For a long time their judgment has not been idle, and their destruction does not slumber. Notice verse 1 describes them with the words destructive heresies, but verse 2 describes their destructive ways. Not just what they say and teach, but how they live, their way of life. Drop down to verse 12. But these, like natural brute beasts, made to be caught and destroyed, speak evil of things they do not understand, and will utterly perish in their own corruption, and will receive the wages of unrighteousness, as those who count it pleasure to carouse in the daytime. They are spots and blemishes, carousing in their own deceptions, while they feast with you, having eyes full of adultery, and that cannot cease from sin, enticing unstable souls. They have a heart trained in covetous practices, and are accursed children. I mean, it just goes on and on like this. This isn't just about what they teach. It's about the kind of lives that they live. The book of Jude has a similar description that emphasizes not just words, but the deeds of false teachers. You see, the New Testament emphasizes that spiritual leaders must not only have orthodoxy. Maybe you've heard that word before. Orthodoxy means straight doctrine. They also must have orthopraxy, which means straight practice. Their conduct, their character must be right, as well as their doctrine. We must choose leaders, we must choose teachers who demonstrate both, for in at least some ways we will end up like them. Then we come to verses 41 and 42, and it's here in particular that Luke's train of thought seems to run off the track. Because in the Sermon on the Mount that is recorded in Matthew, these verses, we're familiar with these verses. In Matthew, these verses are connected with judging others. And we're used to thinking about them in that connection. And in fact, in the second service, we may talk about how these verses can help us in our relationships with others when we have disagreements with them. But Luke here in Luke 6 gives them a completely different connection. They seem to be a description here of the kind of leaders that will lead us into the ditch. And they suggest one final reason why it is so important to follow the right leader, because false teachers often are blind to their own faults. Now, I like these verses. I mean, if you think Jesus doesn't have a sense of humor, you're not paying attention. Okay, read verses 41 and 42 with me again. And why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but do not perceive the plank that is in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, "Brother, let me remove the speck that is in your eye," when you do not see the plank that's in your own eye? I mean, what we have here is nothing less than a cartoon. A caricature of a false leader walking around with a 2x4 sticking out of his eye. I mean, where would you see that if not in a cartoon? And in fact, the word that's used here that I'm calling a 2x4 was actually the kind of beam that was used to support an entire house. How many of you watch any of the remodeling television shows? Okay, I got a few of them. You got The Fixer Upper and This Old House and what? Holmes? Yeah, Holmes. H-O-L-M-E-S. What are a couple? Oh, The Rehab Addict. She's pretty good. The Property Brothers, Flip or Flop. You can tell the kind of reality TV that I like. And oftentimes in those shows, they end up having to replace the main beam under a house. In fact, there was a series of This Old House after Hurricane Sandy a couple of years ago, where they went in and remodeled, rebuilt a number of the homes that were damaged in Hurricane Sandy along the New Jersey shore. And in many of those cases, they had to go in and they had to put steel beams under the house, and it was interesting to watch them do this so that they could lift the houses up, because the new code said that houses now had to be as high as Hurricane Sandy water. And so in many places they had to put these steel beams under them and lift the houses up. So, I mean, what Jesus really is saying here is not a 2x4. He's talking about a 2x12. Or he's talking about a steel beam. I mean, can you imagine with somebody with a 2x12 sticking out of his eye that tells you that he wants to remove a speck of dirt from your eye? What kind of person does that? And that's the point. This cartoon, this caricature, suggests that these kinds of leaders have at least four kinds of faults. First of all, this kind of leader is arrogant. I mean, only a person with a certain degree of arrogance, with a certain level of conceit, with an inflated ego, is willing to focus on minor flaws in your life and mine when he has much bigger issues in his own life. One of the dangers of any leadership position is that it can easily lead to this kind of arrogance, especially if the leader surrounds himself with yes men. Now, as I mentioned earlier, I think Jesus probably had the Pharisees in mind when he was giving this part of the sermon. And here's how Jesus describes Pharisees in Matthew chapter 23. For they bind heavy burdens, hard to bear, and lay them on men's shoulders, but they themselves will not move one of their fingers. Beware of the kind of teacher or leader who prescribes rules and regulations for those who follow him, but he's too big to bother with them himself. Beware of the kind of preacher who preaches to his congregation, but he never preaches to himself. And that leads us directly to the second characteristic. This kind of leader is self-righteous. I mean, only the kind of person who has a terminal case of self-righteousness would fail to notice that he has a 2x12 sticking out of his eye. This is a person who is so convinced of his own righteousness that he doesn't ever bother to look in the mirror. I mean, do you think you would miss a 2x12 sticking out of your eye if you looked in the mirror? And again, this is just how Jesus portrayed the Pharisees. You remember the story in Luke chapter 18? And he also spoke this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and despised others. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, God, I thank you that I am not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this tax collector. I fast twice a week, I give tithes of all that I possess, and I have a 2x12 sticking out of my eye. And the tax collector, standing afar off, would not so much as raise his eyes to heaven, but beat his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other, for everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. And then in the third place, this kind of leader is hypocritical. Jesus calls this leader a hypocrite in verse 42. Hypocrite, first remove the plank from your own eye, and then you'll see clearly to remove the speck that is in your brother's eye. Now, some of you know the word that is translated hypocrite here in our English versions is the word that was used in ancient times of a play actor. It was used of someone who used a mask. You remember the Greek dramas? People would they had masks that they held up. That's the idea here. So the word describes somebody who is different behind the mask than what the mask portrays. And what Jesus is pointing out here is there are often spiritual leaders out there who claim to have spiritual insight when in fact they are blind to their own sins. And then finally, this kind of leader is dangerous. Now, you know, I think perhaps Jesus did not intend us to take this cartoon too literally, but think about it for a minute, from a literal perspective. If a person with a 2x12 sticking out of their eye really tried to help you take a speck out of your eye, what would happen? I mean, they'd end up smacking you upside the head with that 2x12 or sticking it in your eye. I mean, they're a lot more dangerous than they are any kind of a real help. So what Jesus teaches here in verses 41 and 42 is that there are these kinds of spiritual leaders out there in places of spiritual authority. Teachers who are arrogant and self-righteous and hypocritical and ultimately dangerous. And we must not be blind to their existence. We must not be blind to the fact that there are others who may be following them, or they wouldn't be leaders. And we must not be blind to the consequences of following those kinds of leaders. So where does that leave us? Jesus has given us this warning here of the danger of following these kinds of leaders. And I don't know about you, but when I get to the end of this, it leaves me with a question. Well, you know, he's told me who I'm not supposed to follow. Well, who am I supposed to follow? How do we know which leader to follow? What do we look for in a leader? How do we identify a teacher that's not going to lead us into the ditch? So I want to close this message in a very practical way by answering that question. Now, first of all, I want to list some traits that are not helpful in identifying the right kind of leader. You know, just Friday, as I was writing this message, I got an email from a ministry that's designed to help pastors. Okay? So let me read you just part of the email. And hopefully you'll get the connection. Okay? Good morning, Phil. Can you identify the key things that would make a leader successful? If someone held a gun to your head, what would you come up with? Below are 7 suggestions that may help you develop your own must-haves. In quotes, must-haves for success. Let me know what you think. Number 1, the leader must have a genuine passion for their ministry. Number 2, the leader must have a clear understanding about where he wants to take his ministry. Number 3, the leader must have a solid knowledge of the details of his ministry. Number 4, the leader must have the ability to motivate and inspire his staff and volunteers along with their congregation and community. The ability to create positive energy is key to success. Number 5, the leader must have the ability to move their ministry forward right now without losing their view of the long-term investment needed to succeed. Number 6, the leader must have the ability to fight the status quo the way we've always done it in order to lead change. Number 7, the leader must have a we mentality instead of an I mentality. Ministry is a team sport, and the ability to assemble a winning team is the key to success. Well, these are just a handful of must-haves that come to mind as I consider what it generally takes for leaders to succeed. Now, I don't necessarily disagree with any of those points, but think about those 7 points in terms of the words of Jesus here in Luke chapter 6. You can find a pastor who has all of those must-haves, and he will still lead you right into the ditch. There are so many people out there today in broader evangelicalism that are looking for exactly the wrong things in a leader. So I think we need to be very explicit here. Let me give you 3 suggestions, 3 wrong questions. These are not the questions you ought to be asking in order to find a leader, a spiritual leader to follow. Number 1, has this leader built a big, successful church? You know, I think a lot of people today choose a church the way they choose a restaurant. You know, I've had some people in churches that I've pastored that were in the restaurant business. And what happens with restaurants is somebody opens a new restaurant and it's the new thing. And so, whew, everybody goes to that restaurant for like 3 months until another new restaurant opens. And then, phew, everybody goes there and this restaurant begins to shrivel up. That's the way a lot of people choose a church. Oh, this is it. Look, there's this new church down there. And everybody goes there and this is wonderful. Success is not a criterion that you find anywhere in the New Testament for evaluating a pastor or a minister. It is very American. It's a very American idea to evaluate something in terms of success. If it works, it's right. That's a philosophy called pragmatism. It's actually the only philosophy that was born in the USA. And so this is the way a lot of Americans think. If it's big, if it's successful, then it has to be right. Well, that's a good way to find a pragmatist. Now, I'm not saying that all big churches are bad churches. I'm not saying that all preachers that lead those kind of churches are pragmatists, but this is not the right question for finding the spiritual leader that you want to follow. Number two, do I like this guy on a personal level? Am I attracted to his personality? Now, I understand that we're probably not looking for a pastor that we dislike. Okay, I understand that. But neither are we looking for a new best friend. We're looking for a person who's not going to lead us into the ditch and who's going to lead us to spiritual growth and victory. And then number three, does the church make me feel good? Is the preacher entertaining? Many people evaluate a church by what they get out of it, and that's okay. But often they're looking for the wrong things to get out of it. So now let's turn it around. What questions should we ask? And I'm sure that there are other questions that we could be talking about, and we'll have a chance in the second service to talk about some more kinds of questions we ought not ask and maybe some more questions that we should ask if we're going to find the right leader to follow. But the passage that we have focused on this morning suggests two questions that we must ask if we're going to not end up in the ditch. I mean, if you've been listening today, you ought to know what these two questions are without me telling you. Number one, does the leader, does the teacher stick close to the Bible? Verse 40 makes this point. I didn't cover this earlier. But the beginning of verse 40 says, a disciple is not above his teacher. A true disciple is not willing to go beyond his teacher. And of course, the teacher that Jesus is talking about here is himself. The kind of leader, the kind of teacher that we should be following is someone who sees himself as a disciple of Jesus Christ, and he will not go beyond what Jesus has taught in his word. So many teachers and pastors today are so arrogant that they think they know better than Jesus. Joel Osteen has built a church of 30,000, has millions of viewers each week, and this is not a guy that even seriously entertains the idea of preaching from Scripture. I mean, preach through a book of the Bible? Are you kidding me? Perry Noble pastors the biggest church here in our area. Some of you know, last Christmas he preached a message in which he said God did not give 10 commandments, he gave 10 promises. The Apostle John defines a false teacher in 2 John in these words, whoever transgresses, and that word means goes beyond, whoever goes beyond and does not abide in the doctrine of Christ does not have God. John is a great one for putting it in black and white terms. If we are not willing to abide in the doctrine of Scripture, if we're willing to go beyond it, every Christian ought to be looking for a church where the preacher asks you to open up your Bible. Every Christian ought to be looking for a preacher who goes through a book verse by verse or phrase by phrase, who preaches expositionally. Now, it used to be hard to find churches like this. It's not anymore, folks. They're there. At the end of the message, you ought to be thinking, now I understand what Jesus meant. Or now I understand what God meant in His Word. If you can't say that, find another church. Find another leader to follow. Or you'll end up in the ditch. And then number two, does the leader, does the teacher have the character that's demanded of leaders in the New Testament? There's something more important than success. There's something that's more important than charisma. There's something that's more important than personality. It's character. We live in a culture today that is dismissive of character. God is not dismissive of character. Now, take it from me, no preacher is perfect. Okay? I can take the stand on that one. My wife will gladly take the stand on that one. But generally speaking, a preacher, a pastor, a teacher is to have the kind of character that we read about back there in 1 Timothy chapter 3. We see it time and again in our country where men raise huge churches and then it comes out that there's some kind of a moral problem in their lives. And they have to step away from that ministry. You know why that is? Because so many people today who claim to be Christians don't understand that God has put character qualifications for spiritual leaders in His book that He expects us to take seriously so we don't end up in the ditch. You ever been in a car . This has happened to me. I'm almost certain this has happened to me coming back from a wedding or maybe coming back from a funeral. You ever been in a car and you decided to follow somebody? It ends up that that person wasn't headed where you thought they were. I mean, that's happened to me, you know. You get to a wedding reception and it's in some place you're not really familiar with, and so you're ready to leave. You're not really exactly sure how to get back to town, and so you see another person leaving, you know, and you figure, well, they know the way back, so I just follow them. And little did you know, they're headed back to Pennsylvania, you know. And so after about 20 minutes, you figure out, well, this isn't right. We are headed in completely the wrong direction. Now, in that situation, in that circumstance, it costs you a little bit of time. But if you're following the wrong person, the wrong spiritual leader, the wrong teacher, it can end up costing you a lot of time. It's called eternity. Now, I'm happy to say that we've got three families right now ready to join Midway Bible Church. That is such an encouragement to me. So we're going to be getting them through the process and interviews and testimony and receiving them into the fellowship. Some of you may need to make those kinds of decisions. You need to commit to spiritual leadership. Part of what church membership is at a place like Midway Bible Church is saying, yes, I'm going to put myself under the spiritual leadership of this church. I've made that decision. And maybe there's some of you that need to make that decision as well as these three families that have indicated that they want to do this.